Hi there, it's Andrew Langer, president of the Institute for Liberty, and I want to welcome you to our latest edition of the IFL podcast. It is Thursday, the 4th of June, 2009, and we're going to try something a little different today. We're going to come to you from the computer. We're not doing this by phone. Our recording software was having some problems that way, but I think we've got something that'll be a little bit more fun this time. Anyway, we're going to talk this week about Judge Sonia Sotomayor, President Obama's nominee to be the next Justice of the Supreme Court. Obviously, a huge story in the last couple of weeks, getting praise from both sides of the aisle, getting criticism from both sides of the aisle. We are going to come down and talk about two of the most important aspects of this nomination that we think ought to be talked about. Frankly, number one, it's the discharge of her duties as a lower court judge, as a district court judge, as an appellate court judge, and how she is going to interpret the Constitution. The fundamental issues that a justice on the Supreme Court faces. We're going to drill down and talk about really the issue that is most important to me, or one of the issues. Hi there, it's Andrew Langer, president of the Institute for Liberty, and I want to welcome you to our latest edition of the IFL podcast. It is Thursday, the 4th of June, 2009. And we're going to try something a little different today. We're going to come to you from the computer. We're not doing this by phone. Our recording software was having some problems that way. But I think we've got something that'll be a little bit more fun this time. Anyway, we're going to talk this week about Judge Sonia Sotomayor, President Obama's nominee to be the next Justice of the Supreme Court. Obviously, a huge story in the last couple of weeks, getting praise from both sides of the aisle, getting criticism from both sides of the aisle. We are going to come down and talk about two of the most important aspects of this nomination that we think ought to be talked about. Frankly, number one, it's the discharge of her duties as a lower court judge, as a district court judge, as an appellate court judge, and how she is going to interpret the Constitution. The fundamental issues that a justice on the Supreme Court faces. We're going to drill down and talk about really the issue that is most important to me, or one of the issues that's most important to me, that being the issue of private property rights. For those of you who know me, you know that I have worked on private property rights my entire adult career, that I got my start in the public policy world as a private property rights activist, worked for 4 years as the reader to a blind environmental attorney whose specialty was private property rights. As far as I'm concerned, property rights undergird all other individual rights. Without the strong protection of private property rights, political systems, economic systems collapse. The work of Hernando de Soto, the noted Peruvian scholar, the work of Richard Pipes, President Reagan's architect of his Cold War strategy, these all go and demonstrate that without private property rights, a system is going to limp along anemically or, in fact, open itself up to totalitarian rule. These things happen. And so we are very, very interested, obviously, in protecting private property rights as a fundamental issue. And it's one of these things where we've been immensely concerned because property rights have been eroded over the course of the last 150 years, with that erosion accelerating over the last 30 years with the birth of the modern regulatory state and the issue of regulatory takings. The fact is that the property rights came back into the forefront a few years ago with the Kelo case, and just what the Supreme Court can do in terms of private property rights came up during that Kelo case. For those of you who are uninitiated, the Kelo case was the story of this poor woman, Suzette Kelo, an elderly woman who was being forced out of the ancestral home, the home that she was in fact born in New London, Connecticut, to make way for a Pfizer plant. And the High Court ruled on the basis of about 70 years of pre-existing Supreme Court case law on property rights that the taking of this woman's house to make way for a Pfizer plant parking lot was perfectly acceptable. America went crazy about this, as you'll all recall, but the property rights movement never really capitalized on the amount of ire that was shown. And folks were genuinely confused. They could not understand how this could happen. They thought that the Supreme Court was breaking new ground in finding against Suzette Kelo in the Kelo decision, when in point of fact they were relying on many, many decades of Supreme Court precedent, which underscores one of the great problems with this issue of stare decisis, the reliance on precedent, which comes up so often in these Supreme Court hearings and will undoubtedly come up in the Sonia Sotomayor confirmation hearings as well, that we cannot always rely on precedent. We want to have a stable jurisprudential system. But on the other hand, when case law is moving in the wrong direction, and has been moving in the wrong direction for many, many years. Sometimes it takes an act of courage by a justice to demonstrate that the fundamental protections of individual rights need to be respected. So here's where we are. We've got the Sonia Sotomayor nomination, and we recognize that it is ultra, ultra important to focus on these issues. And in order to do this, we have to look at a justice's previous record. The fact is that this concern over private property rights is nothing new, and it is not restricted to a left-leaning appointee like Judge Sotomayor. But in point of fact, we raised very similar issues when it came to Justice Roberts, when he was appointed to the High Court. A number of us raised the issue of his statements about the mutability, the changeability of private property rights, depending on societal mores. And in point of fact, our concerns were borne out by serious concerns that were raised in a decision that came out several years ago called the Jones versus Flowers decision, in which Justice Roberts, in finding that a plaintiff's due process rights had been violated, then turned around and opened up the door to government wholesale violation of due process rights. We were flabbergasted that it came out there. Let me talk about this for a second. Property rights, the issues, the constitutional protections of private property rights are rather simple. The Fifth Amendment says that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. That means when government wants to confiscate land, they have to do three things. Number one, it has to be for legitimate public use. I think anybody can say or can recognize that a legitimate public use is something like a road, a school, a public building, etc., a park, things like that. Then a due process has to be accorded to the property owner. The property owner has to have a forum, a legitimate forum in which his or her pushback on this taking of their property can be heard. This has been one of these fundamental issues that has come up repeatedly in court decisions, especially as anti-growth, anti-development forces come forth, as zoning becomes more restrictive, as government bureaucrats and local elected officials want to restrict the building of land. They come in with preconceived notions about limiting the use of property, and thus someone's due process rights can be violated. Finally, just compensation has to be paid. If it is a legitimate taking of for public use, if due process is accorded, then the land can be taken, but fair, just compensation has to be paid, what a willing buyer pays to a willing seller, fair market value for the land. And property rights cases tend to focus on these three areas, obviously. The Kelo case dealt with the issue of what constitutes legitimate public use. We have other cases that have been out there on procedural and substantive due process. That was really the Jones versus Flower issue. And then there are issues of compensation, whether or not a taking has actually occurred, which is this whole regulatory takings issue, and whether or not government has to compensate if a regulation goes too far, and to what degree does that regulation go too far. So we have Sonia Sotomayor who comes in. We know that she's already going to take a dim view of property rights. But the question is, where has this played out in the past? One of our great concerns at the Institute for Liberty with Judge Sotomayor's record is the number of unsigned opinions that are out there. This is a really important issue. When you are working through, when a case is going to be appealed to the High Court, when scholars look to legal opinions as a way of sort of figuring out what the judges are getting at in terms of their reasoning and in terms of what the actual applicability of a decision might be, they look to those opinions. And unfortunately, we have a number of instances in which Judge Sotomayor has been on a panel that issues an unsigned opinion, in which a judge has made what is a decision that that from the outside a lot of people might find hard to justify, and therefore the judges have not stated who wrote the opinion or who made the decision, and they make things very, very short. And one of the cases that we're focusing on is something called Didden. Didden versus the city of Port Chester, which is a town in suburban New York, a town that has gone through economic redevelopment. And Mr. Didden had land. He owned land within one of these economic redevelopment zones upon which he wanted to build a pharmacy. And one of the local redevelopment officials, a guy named Wasser, came to him and said that they would approve the project if two things happened, or one of two things happened: either didn't pay the local official $800,000, or gave him a partnership interest. And that's not in dispute. This guy Wasser, it's on the record. This did happen. And so, as you can imagine, Dinton said, "There's no way that I am going to do this. This is my pharmacy. I'm going to do it." And Wasser said, "Well, if you don't do this, I am going to use the power of eminent domain, the city's power of eminent domain, to take your property from you, and I'm going to build this pharmacy." And sure enough, this gentleman did it. Dinton went through. He tried to get his project approved, and the city of Port Chester condemned this property, took it away from him under a sort of Kelo-style action. The issue in Kelo was that it relied on the Supreme Court precedents, which says that if public benefit equals public use, and therefore if the tax rolls of the city benefit from this new use over and above the use that the existing owner is going to make of it, then it's public benefit, therefore it's a legitimate public use. It's a very tortured reasoning. So, as you can imagine, Dinton challenged this, and Dinton was overruled, and he appealed. He did not get it, and so Judge Sotomayor was part of this three-judge panel, which merely said that it was perfectly all right. That in point of fact, they said that Wasser, the corrupt official who was trying to extract an interest in Mr. Dinton's business, that this was his voluntary attempt to resolve the appellant's demands. It was absolutely ridiculous, and Judge Sotomayor did not put her name on it. I mean, really, it took Kelo a step further, and I just find this to be completely outrageous. This idea that someone could hold property rights so cheaply that they would actually uphold a corrupt public official's attempt to extract, and in fact, successful attempt to extract some sort of interest in this person's property. So we think that, you know, the fact that Judge Sotomayor believes that this is perfectly awful, the fact that she would move this forward, the fact that she would issue a one-paragraph unsigned opinion upholding this corrupt behavior, we think that this should absolutely preclude her from sitting on the high court. She is exactly the kind of justice that we don't want, especially when it comes to such a fundamental issue as property rights. So we're going to hold it there. Please talk about the Dinton case. If you want to learn more about Jones versus Flowers, check out the Institute for Liberty website, www.instituteforliberty.org. We have a blog about Sotomayor. We have a link to the initial blog about this. So thank you all very much. If you need to send an email, send it to president@instituteforliberty.org, and I look forward to hearing from you all soon. Thanks.